Well, let's get your response, first of all, to the news that we've just been told that you've had the whip taken away.
Well, I think that is meant to be a temporary matter for a period of time before there is an internal investigation within the Conservative Party. And if it is that, for a short period of time, then we must let that take its course.
Right, but do you know that, if you've just had a meeting with the Chief
Whip? That's all I'm going to comment at the moment.
Right, but that's quite serious, isn't it? If they've taken away the whip and you haven't had an expression of confidence from Number 10, then it's not looking very promising for you.
Look, I don't expect the Prime Minister to reach conclusions when there have been various allegations made, and no one is in a position to come to a conclusion at this moment in time. I know exactly what happened. My conscience is entirely clear. And let me just make clear the point that you made in your opening comments. We did not go to this company, I did not go to this company asking for cash for particular obligations. They came to me and said, we are setting up an advisory board. There are dozens of advisory boards that companies set up. I doubt if there's a former Chancellor, Home Secretary or even Prime Minister that hasn't served on one of them over the years. It's entirely lawful as long as it's put into the register of members' interests. And we had a preliminary discussion with these people, and of course they turned out to be bogus Telegraph reporters.
Well, if that's the case, why have you been suspended? What did the Chief Whip say to you?
Well, I'm not going into private conversations. What I understand is that all political parties are in a difficult position when allegations of this kind are made. They don't want to jump to conclusions in either direction.
Oh.
And if there is to be an internal Conservative examination, if I'm given this opportunity, which I understand is likely, that I will be able to present these matters to such a body, and they will be able to come to a view in a very short period of time, one way or the other, that is a reasonable way forward.
Do you think, though, bearing in mind what's just happened, do you think you should stand down as chairman from the Intelligence and Security Committee?
Absolutely nothing to do with it whatsoever.
Hold
on a moment.
But it's about your standing, isn't it? I will let you respond, but all I'm saying is the question is about your standing. Would it be wise, prudent, to stand aside while an investigation is going on?
The question of whether I am chairman is for the committee itself to decide, as Number 10 Downing Street have acknowledged. It's not for the government. The committee itself chooses its chairman nowadays. If they wanted me to step down, of course I would do so. That'll be for them to decide.
Right.
But there's no link between the two.
Hold on a moment.
A single allegation that's even been made by the Daily Telegraph or Channel 4 has any bearing on intelligence and security matters.
Are you sorry about all this?
Well, of course I'm very angry that people make allegations that I know to be unjustified and unfounded. Of course I'm not sorry. I'm absolutely livid.
Are you embarrassed by it?
No, I'm not embarrassed. Of course, I wish it hadn't happened. That goes without saying. But I've just told you, I'm livid, I'm angry, and I'm going to make sure these unfounded allegations are put in the dustbin where they belong.
What do you say to Sir Alastair Graham, the former chairman of the Committee on Standards in Public Life? He said today, I was genuinely shocked that two of our most experienced parliamentarians fell for what was a pretty transparent sting and putting so much effort and energy into seeking another consultancy lobbying-type contract with a private company. I'll just finish what he said.
Is
this really what we want our MPs to be about?
Well, I didn't put any effort at all into getting this extra consultancy, as you so kindly describe it. They sent me an email saying, we are setting up an advisory board, we want to invest in the United Kingdom. Would you be willing to have a preliminary discussion with us as to whether you can give us advice? And I said, I'm perfectly willing to have a preliminary discussion with you. End of story.
What do you say, though, about the phrase? Because Sir Alastair Graham is particularly worried about the code of conduct being breached when you say to the undercover reporter that you could write to a minister. And he says, Sir Alastair Graham, that writing to a minister is an abuse of your privileged position. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, he's entitled to his opinion like anybody else. But the crucial point is that at that stage in the discussion we were having, it was accepted, and indeed Channel 4 themselves have acknowledged this, that I made it clear that I would not take any action at all to try and help them get access to any either preferred information or sensitive information, anything that was not in the public domain.
But you would
That's
write to a minister.
That's the crucial point.
No, fine, but
there's nothing wrong with writing to a minister if you are trying to find out what is already in the public domain, what is already available to everybody else. And that's what we were discussing.
Do you need to earn more money beyond the responsibility you hold?
Well, the fact is that about 200 members of Parliament do have outside earnings. And there's a very good point that has to be borne in mind. If one wants the House of Commons to attract not just people who'd like to be MPs, but that that should include at least a significant proportion of people from a professional background or a business background. I'm well aware that £60,000 sounds a lot of money to anyone earning less than that. But the reality is that anyone from a professional or business background earns considerably more than that. And if you say to people, I'm sorry, for the whole of your parliamentary career, that is the maximum you will be able to earn, then you can do that. But you would simply be excluding very large numbers of very able people who have a lot to contribute to Parliament.
Right.
Because they could not, and their families would not allow them to accept such a substantial reduction in their standard of living.
On your point of having a broader portfolio, a hinterland, if you like, many members of the public will agree with that. But they might say, why don't you do voluntary work or charity work? Why don't you broaden your horizons that way?
Because I have two objectives. I have to have that broader hinterland, as you so nicely describe it. But I do also want to have the standard of living that my professional background would normally entitle me to have. Now, as long as we have a register of members' interests, as long as the law says this is an entirely acceptable thing to do, in the last, it's perfectly possible for people to argue that MPs should not be allowed to have, by law, by the rules, additional employment. That's an alternative point of view. That is not the view that has been taken either by Parliament itself, or indeed in surveys of public opinion by the majority of the public.
Do you understand?
Because the majority of the public say they like the idea of MPs not just being full-time 100% politicians with nothing else to speak about.
Well, but there will be plenty of voters who will feel that actually having jobs outside interests and outside earnings, A, could be a conflict of interest. I'm not saying in this particular case, Martin, but it could be a conflict of interest. And also, aren't you busy enough, in your terms, you're scrutinising policy decisions that affect national security, you're
that,
important with an...
Yeah,
well, you know, you're
that.
An MP and you've got your constituents to worry about.
Sure.
And they will actually have very little sympathy with what you've just said.
Well, not if they understand the full picture. You know, I was Foreign Secretary, as you pointed out. Oh. When I was Foreign Secretary, 95% of my time was taken up with being Foreign Secretary, as I'm sure is true of the current Foreign Secretary. 5% was left for my constituency. Now I spend 70, 75% of my time on parliamentary and constituency work. My business interests are a small portion of the total. So do remember, every minister of the government, how much time do you think the Prime Minister spends in his constituency or looking after his constituents' interests? He's spending all his time doing another job for which he receives quite a large salary.
Right.
So, every minister gets two salaries.
Yes. No.
And, you know, somehow you would assume that that's a perfectly legitimate situation which is compatible with our parliamentary responsibilities.
But that's because it's seen in their public role and they're in Parliament for that. It does sound like it's all about the money.
No, that's a rather nasty little innuendo, as if somehow... that's a consideration that people are only interested in. That is not the case. I've already explained to you that you could double MP salaries if you wanted to attract people of a professional and business background.
Do you think that
numbers
should
require.
Happen?
But I don't know. I don't think it should
no.
happen.
Okay.
That's exactly the point. I don't think it should happen. I don't think the taxpayer should be expected to fund it. But if I can look after my constituency requirements very adequately and very satisfactorily, and that's for my constituents to decide. We're coming up to an election. The voters will decide. If I can do that, then that is an acceptable situation.
If we just go back to the sting itself, I mean, bearing in mind the position you hold and that you are a very experienced politician, why didn't you do a cursory Google search of the Chinese company before going to meet them?
As it so happens, they did have a website, although it turned out obviously to be a bogus one. But they explained that they were a very wealthy Chinese Hong Kong family, and of which there are very many, as we all know, who had just created a new corporate identity and wished to invest throughout Europe, including in the United Kingdom.
Malcolm Rifkind, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Lucy Fraser.